Black Wednesday. Does anybody know what Black Wednesday is? You know what Black Friday is, right? Just happened right after Thanksgiving. You know what Black Wednesday is? I didn't know this. It's also known as Drinksgiving or Whiskey Wednesday. It's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, where, among other ways to identify it, it's drinking, Drinksgiving, and Whiskey Wednesday and Black Wednesday. It was coined earlier in this decade to describe a spike in alcohol sales and an increase in the number of people heading out to reconnect with friends home for the holiday. It is a night when heavy drinking is highlighted and even encouraged, according to the National Highway Traffic and Safety, if I got that, the NHTSA. As a result, drunk driving-related crashes increase. I suspect that any officer in our area knows exactly what Black Wednesday is. I pulled it up online, and sure enough, there was young people tweeting about, hey, I'm headed home, woo-hoo, you know, we're going to go out and party, and that's what it's known for. More than 800 people died in vehicle crashes on this day from 2013 to 2017. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. In 2018 alone, 133 people died in alcohol-related crashes from Wednesday, 6 p.m., to Monday morning at 5:59 a.m., according to MothersAgainstDrunkDriving.com. So basically, it shows you that we have a real problem with drinking in our country. It's popularized, it's highlighted, it's advertised, it's people can't wait for the Super Bowl to show up because we can go see all these advertisements and commercials, and many of them are alcohol-related commercials. U.S. News had a chart of the most dangerous states to drive in during Drinksgiving. You see, we made the list. Number one, Mississippi, right next door. The high school class can attest to the fact that I often tell them, just flat out, don't touch it, right? Don't touch it. Just don't drink it for the first time. Never try it. Just stay away from it. The same is true of drugs. And don't let anybody talk you into that either. We've got a real problem. It's making the national news. Look at this. Every day, more than 130 people in the United States die after overdosing on opioids. The misuse of an addiction to opioids, including prescription pain relievers, heroin, and synthetic opioids such as fentanyl, is a serious national crisis that affects public health as well as social and economic welfare. The Center of Disease Control and Prevention estimates that the total economic burden of prescription opioid misuse alone in the United States is $78.5 billion, with a B, dollars a year, including the cost of health care, lost productivity, addiction treatment, and criminal justice involvement. If you were in any state, I think, in the country, you would hear that it's a crisis in the state that you live in. It's something that Alabama is dealing with. And by the way, let's just add gambling to that list now as a woo-hoo, you know, trying to get gambling. It's ridiculous, because when gambling comes to this state, it will cause many, many problems. And yet it's being pushed as a way of saying, what is the commercial out there now, $1 billion to the state or something. It's been promised everywhere I've lived. And you know how they're doing it now, right? Back in Wisconsin, there was all kinds of casinos. And I'm not talking about gambling, but this just highlights the problems that we have in this country. The gambling was able to come because the Indians could put it on the reservation. And if I'm not mistaken, the commercial I'm hearing right now in Alabama is the Indians are trying to get a casino. I don't know where they're located. Some of you might know. But that's probably how they'll get it into the state. And then they promise, you know, that there'll be a lot of money that comes back to the state. So we've got problems with immorality. And we've got a real problem with alcohol. And we've got a real problem with drugs. And this lesson is not just for our youth. What I wanted to do, and the reason I thought about doing this, is for the ones in the class. Emily right away mouthed exactly what I was going to say. Don't touch it. But then it's like your parents say, don't, and then you go, why? Right? Well, we're answering the why. And I want it to be in your mind, because in reality, our children grow up. And what I may have said 3 or 4 years ago, 2 years ago, they're even more mature. But this lesson isn't just for our young people. I sat across the table from a member of the church. I didn't know what I was about to hear. But what he proceeded to tell me, this fellow saint, understand this was a Christian, a follower of Christ. And what he wanted to tell me is he had been pulled over for drunk driving. He had been at some type of institution. I'm not going to name it, but he was part of like a men's club type of thing. That didn't sound right either. Think of Lions Club or something of that nature, okay? Rotary Club, that type of thing. He was a member, and they'd had a party, and he drank at that party, and he got pulled over for drunk driving. And this was a brother in Christ. This was a fellow Christian. This wasn't a child. This was a man who was retired from working. So this is a challenge for God's people. I met a member at the building a number of years ago, and I didn't know why I was meeting him. Again, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know why I was asked to come. And we sat out on the step of the building, and I learned that while he had been baptized years ago, he really had not repented. He was doing drugs before he was baptized. We would say obeyed the gospel, and he was still doing drugs. He had hid it so well. He had actually managed to go off of it for some time, but it actually explained a lot of things that you wondered. This was a Christian. This was someone that was teaching. This was someone that was giving an invitation. This was someone leading prayers and waiting at the table. And yet he had never given up what he had been doing before. The Bible has stories about alcohol and what it does to a person. Go over to Genesis chapter 9, which is where we want to start. It doesn't mention drugs, but anything that the body considers to be toxic will have its effect upon the body. And thus, we can talk about it just like we talk about alcohol. That we need to understand that anything that's going to be affecting the body and causing it to lose sobriety and consciousness is a sinful thing. So, kind of taking a different approach than maybe I have in the past, I wanted to go and look at some very horrible Bible stories where men got drunk, people got drunk, and then talk about how they acted in those situations. The first was read for us here in Genesis chapter 9 and in verse 18 to 25. And one thing about the Bible is it doesn't sugarcoat anything. There are things that we don't necessarily feel comfortable about talking about. Song of Solomon. We don't actually sometimes feel comfortable talking about when someone violates another, a man violates a woman, but that's in the Scriptures. When Tamar's brother, basically today we'd say he raped her. She asked him not to, and he did. So the Bible talks about these grievous things, and here's one where in the context, Noah gets drunk. Now, we're not actually going to look at Noah. I mean, it may very well be, and I'm not really going to talk so much about fermentation and those types of things. We can maybe do that at another time, but for whatever reason, it says that Noah was a farmer, and he planted a vineyard coming off the ark, and he apparently drank so much of the fruit of the vine that he got intoxicated. And perhaps, I don't know whether it was intentional or whatever, but what I want us to understand is this, and this comes from Matthew Henry in his commentary. He says, Noah is so destitute of thought and reason that he seeks no covering. This was a fruit of the vine that Noah did not think of. Observe here the great evil of the sin of drunkenness. It discovers men. what infirmities they have. They betray when they are drunk, and what secrets they are entrusted with are then easily got out of them. Drunken porters keep open gates. It disgraces men and exposes them to contempt. As it shows them, so it is shame. So it shames them. Men say and do that when drunk, which when they are sober, they would blush at the thoughts. So basically, Noah has no idea that he is lying there with no clothes on because he's drunk. Now, Ham is cursed for seeing the nakedness of his father. And today, fathers, we need to think about it. We don't just walk around without any clothes on. That it's a shameful thing, and Ham is cursed. Now, how much is involved? All I know is that the two brothers, it sounds as though, to me, that, you know, he walked into a situation that should have been the end of it. But instead, what does he do? He goes and he says something to his brothers. It should have stayed right there with him. And so they go and they cover his nakedness. But the point I want you to understand is that Noah, because he is drunk, has no idea that he's in this state. Look at Matthew Henry, actually, in that quote, cites Habakkuk chapter 2. Turn over to Habakkuk chapter 2. And I think this is good to kind of see some of the things that we're talking about. In Habakkuk chapter 2 and in verse 15, "Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbor, pressing him to your bottle, even to make him drunk, that you may look on his nakedness. You are filled with shame instead of glory. You also drink and be exposed as uncircumcised. The cup of the Lord's right hand will be turned against you, and utter shame will be on your glory." Now that actually indicates that what you did is you got them drunk to see their nakedness. So some wonder if there wasn't more to this with Ham when he saw his father's nakedness. But what we see is that Ham did not cover up his father's nakedness, but shared that with his brother, and so he was cursed. His child, Canaan, it cursed his descendants. But notice, it was because Noah was not in his clear mind and destitute of what's going on around him, had exposed himself while he was drunk. Now, let's look at Lot. Look over at Genesis chapter 19. This one makes you sick. So Lot has escaped Sodom. And his wife has looked back and she has turned to a pillar of salt. And he goes up into the mountains. And then we find him with his daughters. And let's begin reading in verse 30 of chapter 19 of Genesis. So it says, "And Lot had asked if he could go to the city of Zoar. Then Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountains, and his two daughters were with him, for he was afraid to dwell in Zoar. And he and his two daughters dwelt in a cave. Now the firstborn said to the younger, 'Our father is old, there is no man on the earth to come into us, as is the custom of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father.' So they made their father drink wine that night. And the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. It happened on the next day that the firstborn said to the younger, 'Indeed, I lay with my father last night. Let us make him drink wine tonight. You go in and lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father.' Then they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. Thus both the daughters of Lot were with child by their father. The firstborn is called Moab." This is where the Moabites come from. "And the younger is called Ben-Ammanai. He is the father of the people of Ammon." So the Ammonites. That's pretty sick. But did you pick up on anything about what drinking does? This father did not even know that his daughter came in the room. He didn't even know she left. He wasn't even a free will participant. He was so out of his mind by drinking, and they got him drunk. And that's sick. But this type of behavior is often in the news. men on college campuses get young ladies drunk and then violate them. This is the sinful nature of alcohol. This is the type of things that take place when people start drinking intoxicating drinks. Let's look over at 1 Samuel chapter 25 in the story of Nabal. All right, so as you're turning there, this is the story where David and his men have Nabal. Nabal is a very rich man, and he has flocks out in the field, and David and his men have protected them as they're shearing the sheep. They've stood there, and well, it's come a feast day, and they decide, well, we need to ask Nabal if he'll give us what we need. So he sends his young men to ask Nabal if they can have the things that they need, and they tell him about how they had helped protect their shepherds, and the shepherds can verify to that. They didn't take anything from them. They treated them very nice, and so they're asking for some act of kindness. But Nabal refuses to do that. In fact, David said, go let him know that David's asked for it. And he just blows David off. Who's David? And so what happens is, while he refuses David's request, you know what David does? David says, strap on your swords. And he says, I'm going to go kill all of his male. Serve everybody. If there's a male, I'm going to kill him. But then there's the woman Abigail, his wife, who stopped all that, because she had her senses about her. And she knew what kind of man her husband was. And so she was able to stop David. But notice what it says in our text of verse 36 and 37. It says, now Abigail went to Nabal, and there he was, holding a feast in his house like the feast of a king. Nabal's heart was merry within him, and he was very drunk. Therefore she told him nothing, little or much, until morning light. So it was in the morning, when the wine had gone from Nabal, and his wife had told him these things, that his heart died within him and he became like a stone. And then it says in the next verse that he was struck dead. Do you see anything there about what alcohol does to you? You see, I'm trying to look at this from that standpoint. He's banqueting like a king. And notice that we would today say he's so plastered. I don't know if the kids know that term or not, but it means he's intoxicated, he's plastered with drink. That she can't tell him anything. She realizes he won't know anything, he won't remember anything, he won't be able to make any kind of judgment about this. But notice something else that it says. It says it had to wear off during the night, didn't it? What's that say about what the body's trying to do with what you put in it? Trying to get rid of it, isn't it? And that's the way the body treats this, whether it be a drug or alcohol. It treats it for what it is, a poison to the body. There's nothing good that's going to come out of something like this. That's why I tell the kids, just don't even touch it. There's no reason to even go down this road. And a lot of people who have actually tried it say, I tried a beer and I didn't like it. A lot of people just say, it's kind of like me and coffee for the longest time. I didn't think coffee tasted good. In fact, to me, I don't like to drink coffee. I have to put water in it. I have to put ice in it. I have to put milk in it. I have to put some sugar in it. So I make a big old iced coffee. But to drink a cup of coffee, I can't stand it. A lot of people say, well, you have to learn how to drink these things. Don't put it in your mouth. Don't take the first drink. Look at 2 Samuel. This is the story of David has gotten Bathsheba pregnant. He's taken another man's wife, brought her up to his palace as he saw her out bathing. He has committed sexual immorality with her, and now she's pregnant. And so what does David try to do? What does David try to do to solve this problem? Look at chapter 11 and verse 13. Uriah, he sins. Uriah comes back. Uriah is a devout soldier, and David just wants him to go home and have a relationship with his wife. And see, basically, you understand how devious this is? If he can go home and have a sexual relationship with his wife, then who's going to know whose child this is? Hey, this is before DNA, right? But somebody always knows what's going on. David, thou art the man. God sent the prophet, said David. God knows what you did. But look at what he stoops to. because the man won't go home. And basically he's saying the soldiers are out here fighting in tents. I can't go home. So he won't leave. He just sleeps outside the gate. So what does David have to do? Verse 13. So David said to Nathan, oops, let me get in the right place. Verse 13 of 11. Now when David called him, he ate and drank before him, and he made him drunk. And at evening he went out to lie on his bed with the servants of his Lord, but he did not go down to his house. Now, why in the world did David try to get him drunk? So he would become loose. He would say, oh, I'm going to go home and see my wife. And then David's problem would be solved. Carrie Underwood has a song. Last night, I got served. A little too much of that poison, baby. Last night, I did things I'm not proud of, and I got a little crazy last night. Last night, I met a guy on the dance floor, and I let him call me baby. And I don't even know my last name. My mama would be so ashamed. It started out, hey, cutie, where are you from? Then it turned out, oh, no, what have I done? And I don't even know my last name. And everybody goes, oh, what a cute song. Got a catchy beat. But did you catch what started all that? I got a little too much of that poison. In fact, she goes on, I think, in the song to talk about tequila and drinks, you know, specific drinks. And that's what happens. And that's what David was counting on, that Uriah would go, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going home. Well, let's talk a minute about the effects of drinking. The number, you know, basically, you stumble in judgment. Look at Isaiah chapter 28 and verse 7. Isaiah 28 and verse 7. This is what the prophet says. But they also have erred through wine, through intoxicating drink, are out of the way. The priests and the prophets have erred through intoxicating drink. They are swallowed up by wine. They are out of the way through intoxicating drink. They err in vision. They stumble in judgment. You know, God was so displeased throughout the minor prophets with the priest, the leadership in Israel, because they weren't leading the people in righteousness. They were unrighteous themselves. Same thing when we come to the New Testament. Pharisees, Sadducees, these chief priests and rulers, God wasn't happy because they were not living a righteous life. And so here you have, what's the problem? They were drinking. And did you notice? They err in vision. They stumble in judgment. The thing about alcohol and drugs is they affect each one differently. Somebody says, well, I can drink three beers before I get drunk. Listen to what I want to say here. They affect everyone differently. But you know what it does to each individual? It starts to make you drunk with the very first taste. You take just a sip. If this is a poison, if this is something the body does not want, what's it going to do? Even if it's one sip. In fact, there's a saying, one sip drunk. It may not show up on a breathalyzer test, and you may not be pulled over by an officer. But when it goes in the body starts rejecting it. And so there is effect. And so here's a slide, the effects of the body, euphoria. It's probably what most people want at the start. It's that bot high. It's that, you know, I'm happy, I'm in a good mood. But then it leads to excitement. Now you're jumping off things, you're crashing through things, you're acting like a fool. But then it goes to, well, now I'm confused. I don't know which way's up or which way's down. And then I end up in a stupor. Here's your blood alcohol levels. And then there's a coma, which we hear in the national news, right? What happened to that boy in the fraternity? Well, he was on one of these drinking binges, and now he's in a coma. Now, if something's good for you, why in the world would it throw you into a coma? Well, that's excess. No, that's what happens to the body. It starts and it gradually begins to affect the body. And like I said, probably a lot of people just want it for the way it makes them feel, and that people say, well, I drink a beer at night so I can relax and it makes me feel a little bit good. Something of that nature. Maybe the drug, because it makes you feel a little high, maybe lets you relax a little bit at the end of a day. But as these things become something that the body craves, because what's going to happen? It's going to take another one to get that effect. It's going to take another one to get that effect. Before you know it, you're just drinking all the time. And there's another truth, by the way. An alcoholic, how did he get there? Started with the first drink. You understand that? It started with the first time you started drinking. And then they say, well, I didn't mean to get there. But how many of you have been affected by this sin, this sinful thing? It even leads to death. And that makes the national news. I wonder how many people were not killed in an automobile accident on Black Wednesday, but died in their home because they went this far and the body shut down and they died. That's not in the statistic. For some reason or other, you can drink, just don't get behind a wheel. What you do in the privacy of your home, well, listen, God's watching. Well, look at Proverbs 23. Proverbs chapter 23. As I said, the Bible does not approach this subject with a half-heartedness or just in a word. I mean, it's very descriptive. Look at Proverbs 23 and look at verse 29 beginning. Woe. Who has woe? What's alcohol going to do? Alcohol going to do? It's going to cause woe. Who has sorrow? What's alcohol going to do? It's going to cause sorrow. Who has contention? What do you hear? Got in a fight in the bar. Contentions, friction, arguments. Who has that? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without a cause? I don't know how I got this black eye. Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine. Those who go in search of mixed wine. Now listen, do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smooth. Isn't that funny? Isn't that the picture of the snob? You know? Everything against what this says is they're going to, you know, swirl around, look at it, how nice it is. Oh, and I'm telling you, it's popping up everywhere. Self-brews, all these brew places. Everybody's got vineyards, vineyard tours. Come and taste our wines. It's just so permeated. And you know who started that whole prohibition thing that the country finally shut down and it stuck for a long time in this area? I'm not even sure if it's still in Limestone County. I think since I've been here, they've had to change some laws. Women, mother, I mean the wives, is ruining their homes. In fact, I heard an old song. It's kind of comical, but she basically met her husband at the door when he came home drunk, and she says, I'm going to turn the house into I'm going to hire a wino to decorate the house. So she could keep the money in the house. And she says, when you wake up the next morning, I will have put it in the bank. You're just giving it to me. Isn't that sad? We think that's comical. But that tells a story. They say cute country music tells a story. That tells a story that has happened to many people. And it's not something that's funny. Notice he says, as he continues, he says, those who go in search of mixed wine, do not look on the wine when it is red, verse 31, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly, and at last, what does it do? It bites like a serpent. He says it stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things. Your heart will utter perverse things. Yes, you will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea or one who lies at the top of the mast saying, they have struck me, but I have not hurt. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. When shall I wake? I may seek another drink. Wow. Notice some things. Your eyes are going to see strange things. Affects your vision. Your heart's going to speak wicked things. It affects your speech and your judgment. You say things. That's what Matthew Henry's point was. you say and do things that you never thought. And when you find out what you did the next morning, you're ashamed of what you did. You feel nauseous. It affects your sensation. Do you see that? It deadens your senses. You don't even know. And you know what? How many people have been drunk in a car and it kills somebody else, but they're so limber and loose that they walk away? And they don't even know what they've done. And then the reality sets in when they're sitting in a prison realizing they've been charged with murder, manslaughter, vehicular manslaughter. You have killed these people. And you were just out having party and having fun. Well, notice the addictive nature there in verse 35. When I awake, that I may seek another drink. The addictive nature of this, that's not something to fool around with. Now, one last verse, and the lesson is yours. 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4. Now, I just want you to know that you might say, well, but what about this drink, and what about that, and what about this situation? Brethren, remember 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 1 through 4, because what Peter does is he condemns every level and every piece of it. Notice what he says in verse 1. Therefore, since Christ suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same mind, for he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, that he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh for the lust of men, but for the will of God. For we have spent enough of our past life in doing the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In regard to these things, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you. All levels, all stages of alcohol and partying and social and drunkenness, it's all condemned here. Drunkenness is condemned as a sinful behavior. Revelries, this is the idea of banqueting and drinking parties. So there's your social drinking. Well, we're just having a party and we're just drinking. I remember, again, preaching and having a young man on a college campus and having discussions with him, trying to get him to realize, no, you can't go over there with your college friends and just stand around and have social drinks. And at the same time, he was trying to help a young lady come to Christ. Now, notice the language. You no longer live the rest of the time in the flesh of the lust of men, but for the will of God. This is your past. Now think about this. So Peter says banqueting, partying, drunkenness is in the disciples' past. If it's in a follower of Christ's past, should any Christian look to it into their future? Does that make sense? If it's something you're supposed to have left behind, then what makes us think to the young people say, well, I've got it in my future. Can't wait till I turn 21. Can't wait till I get away from mom and dad. If it's something in the past, why would we say, well, it can be a part of your future? That's foolishness. And I would say one other thing as we close. Today, you might think about, well, alcohol, and so there's a lot to be said about alcohol in the past and alcohol today. I'll tell you this, today's alcoholic beverage is strengthened. It is fortified. It's not what they used to do in old times. You use a lot of the same processes, but what they do today is to spike that bugger. And they may package it to where it looks like a nice little fruity drink. Or you might be like me. Remember I told you the other day I went up to the Slurpee machine? Only it wasn't a Slurpee machine. It was actually a frozen daiquiri machine, and I thought I was ordering a Slurpee at the little pavilion there at Disney World. And they said, I'm sorry, young man, you can't have that because I wasn't even of age. It just looked like a nice Slurpee to me. Packaging looked great. Mike's Hard Lemonade looks like a nice little refreshing bottle of lemonade. But I'll tell you what, they put some zing in those things. If you drink it, it's going to affect you. It's going to start with that euphoria and work its way down. So, I say again, don't touch it. Now, hopefully, you have some things to think about as to why. Why I don't touch it. Why I don't go down that path. I will tell you again, I've been so disheartened and hurt so many times when I learn of dear brethren whose children have gone asunder, and I say, what happened? And they say they started drinking. Breaks my heart every time. I've looked at teenagers for the last 19 years that I've been teaching a class every year. And I've told them the same thing I tell these kids every time in this class. Don't touch it. Comes out. Doesn't matter what we're studying. It's always there. It's always something that I end up stressing some way or somehow because it's just destroyed too many people's lives. And the Bible condemns it. I hope that's been helpful. Maybe here tonight and you're ready to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. We talked this morning about the gospel, about the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. Maybe you're ready to commit your life to Christ. We're ready to help you take your confession, baptize you into Christ. Turn from your sins and do that before it's too late. If you're subject to the invitation, maybe you're a child of God, you need prayer on your behalf, there's sin that you need to confess. If we can help you in any way, we invite you to come as together we stand and sing.